But we have a guest in studio with us right now. We have author and attorney David Maraldi joining us. David, thank you so much for coming in studio. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me.
And we're here to talk about your book, The Edge of Innocence. Now, this is based on the story of the death of Florence Bennett back in 1963. For those who aren't familiar with the story, can you explain?
Well, back in 1963, December 20th, Florence was found dead in the family bathtub in scalding water, and her husband, Casper, was the target of the criminal investigation. His trial took place in April of 1964. My father was one of the criminal defense attorneys on that case.
Interesting. And, you know, as this book is described, you know, it's interesting the way this is all detailed. Now, people in the office earlier today, they were asking, you know, is this just like a rehash of the events? Is this a collection of the events these many years later? Or is this a fictitious twist on this? So which of those? Is it a combination of all those?
Well, it is historical fiction, and I would say it's 90% historical, 10% fiction. Unfortunately, there was no transcript of the trial, so I had to recreate the trial through the newspaper accounts. And back then, the newspaper reporters were there all day. Sometimes the Chronicle and the Journal would have a half page devoted to a trial. I was also very, very fortunate to get the complete police investigation through a public records request that gave me loads of information that did not come out at trial. I also did some research myself, and I've learned a lot and learned some things that I think would have been very pivotal in the trial if it had come out then.
This is an interesting story because one of the things in the description of the book mentions that, you know, it was the scalding hot water, which is essentially what killed Florence Bennett. Now, her husband, Casper, was the main target, as you mentioned, because, you know, when the police arrived, I mean, his hands were burned, right?
That's correct.
I mean, and as you were taking a look at some of the key components of this trial, and, you know, just kind of recreating it, as you mentioned, what were some of the things that came with that? Without totally spoiling the book, what are some of the things that came out of that that just blew you away?
Well, I would first say that the medical evidence, when you consider the investigations in the 1960s compared to what we see on CSI and on the television, it was very crude and very basic, the type of investigation that occurred. Our coroner was an elected position. He was an anesthesiologist, and he, from the very beginning, he pinpointed Casper as the culprit, and not based on a lot of scientific evidence, but on a lot of hunches. So, I would say that that's quite interesting, just how things have changed. The other thing that is so different today in our criminal process is that each side gets to discover what the other side's case is about. You know, their reports are disclosed. Back then, in the 60s and before, it was often trial by ambush. Each attorney had some surprises up their sleeves, and that's what makes this trial, I think, pretty interesting.
Talk about how fun this was for you also. You mentioned your personal connection, your father being one of the defense attorneys in this case as well. And, you know, for you, you rewrite the story, right? And you get a chance, as you mentioned, about 10% fiction. How much fun was that for you to go through and look at some of these old files and still have the ability to put that fictitious twist on there?
Well, it was great fun, and it continues to be great fun as I connect with people who have read the book, particularly people from Lorain County, the thing about the book is it takes us back. A book should take you back to a different time and place, and this book takes us back to the Lorain of the 1960s when it was a thriving manufacturing city, an excellent school system, a vibrant downtown. It was a city of immigrants. You know, half of the population were either immigrants or first generation. So, you know, it for people who are reading the book, it takes them back to that, particularly if they lived in Lorraine, it takes them back to that era, and it's fun to revisit that.
No question about it. Again, we're talking with David Maraldi, his book, The Edge of Innocence. It's been out since July, but I know you've got a lot of book signings coming up and a lot of book discussions coming up as well. What kinds of conversations do you get into? What kinds of conversations have you had at some of these book signings and these book discussions?
Well, I don't want to go into a lot of detail because oftentimes people will tell me things that if I had known, I probably would have put in the book. But it's funny. Today I was at the Amherst Public Library for one of the book groups, and we had a very interesting discussion about immigration, which is a hot topic here in our country. And one of the it's not something that, that I'm hitting anybody over the head with in terms of immigration, but when you look at this case, the major players were all children of immigrants. The judge, Judge Pensura, my father, whose parents came from Italy, the two prosecutors, Judge Mikas and John Otero, were first generation. And I think we forget how quickly the children of immigrants can fit into our society and make meaningful contributions. So, you know, when you talk about things that we've discussed, that's one that I think is timely, and it's a good thing to remember.
Sure. When you write something like that, David, are you thinking about that as you put it into it, or is that just a topic that kind of comes up as more and more people are reading it?
I think that is something that comes up as more and more people read it. But I think as I was writing it, I was surprised by all of the characters having that background. All but one of the defense attorneys, Lott Adams, the family had been in Lorraine County for a long time. But when you talk about the police officers who were investigating, and that makes sense because Lorraine is a city of immigrants, you know, and half of the population were immigrants. So it sort of worked its way into the book, and it's something that I saw after the book was completed.
Talk about the research that goes into this as well. How long of a process was this to put this entire book together? Because, you know, when we see the finished product, you know, I don't think we always see the work that goes into putting a book together. How long of a process was this?
Well, I actually began writing in earnest in, I'd say, January of 2016. But I had been researching probably for about 5 years before I actually started putting pen to paper. But the actual writing process, I completed it in 4 months, and then I rewrote it twice after the first draft.
Now, I want to dive into something here very quickly, too. Just taking a look at your website and getting some details about the book, you know, long after, you know, your father's passing, you put this book together, and you found the file buried in the bottom of your mom's closet. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how you discovered all this?
Well, you know what? I think I'd probably want to start 55 years ago because if you ask for my motivation for writing the book, 55 years ago, my brother and I were home alone, and I was 10 and he was 12. My folks were out for the evening when the phone rang around 11 p.m., and I thought it was one of our parents checking on us. And as it turned out, the man identified himself, not by name, but that he was calling from jail and that he wanted to speak to my father. As it turned out, that was Casper Bennett. And that would be my one and only contact with him. And I think it's a bit ironic that, you know, 5 decades later, I would write his story. But what you mentioned about finding the file, this is 40 years after the trial, 20 years after my dad's death. We're at my mom's apartment to move her into assisted living, and it was the only file that my father had brought home and that my mother had saved. And I took it home with me because I remembered the case very well as a 10-year-old. But I didn't look at it for about 4 or 5 years. And you know, I had other things, more pressing things. And then I finally looked at it, and the one thing that really grabbed me, my father had written out his closing argument, you know, in sentence form, and I not only could I read it, but I could hear him delivering it, and that's when I got hooked. I knew I had to write the book after I had read that.
It's got to blow you away, too, when you take a look at some of these reviews. We spoke of this off-air. You know, it's one thing for people in this area to have a connection with this because they know the story. Some folks who have read it, they were around by it, or if they weren't around, you know, they were fascinated by the story itself. But, I mean, you've got to be blown away by some of the reviews that come out from people who have no connection to the story whatsoever, people who are not even in the same country.
Right. As we talked before we went on the air, we're talking about the power of the internet and the power of Amazon. And this book is published through Amazon and Ingram Spark. These are companies that allow people such as myself to get a book out there. They're printed on demand, which means somebody orders the book and they print it and it gets out there in 48 hours. Which me and Amazon has distribution in Europe and elsewhere. So, you know, if somebody in Africa or Australia wants the book and it's mentioned on somebody's website, they read it. It truly is amazing.
It really is. Maybe we live in this age of the internet. It's a beautiful thing. I guess it's both a blessing and a curse, but in this case, it certainly worked wonders.
It's fun. It's fun.
It can be very, very fun. Well, we appreciate you stopping in the studio, spending some time with us. You mentioned that earlier today you were out at the Amherst Public Library. For our listeners who are interested in maybe stopping by, picking up a book, getting you to sign it, where else are you going to be in the coming months?
Okay. This Saturday, I'm at the Palace Theater from 2 to 4. And if you haven't been to the Palace Theater lately, they're always doing something to make that gem sparkle. So, and there's free wine and cheese. So even if you don't want to see me or get a copy of the book, come out and take a look at the theater. I'm going to be at the Elyria Public Library, I believe, April 18th. I'll be at the Lorraine Historical Society April 12th, April 19th. These things are all on my website, davidmoraldi.com. April 19th, I'm at the Lakewood Public Library, Meet the Authors. April 21st, LaGrange Library, Book and Brunch, which is a Saturday. I've got a couple of events coming up, and I love to connect with people who've read the book or are interested in the book. I'm happy to come to people's book groups if they've chosen that as their monthly topic.
Very cool stuff. David, this was a lot of fun. This is a very interesting story. We look forward to reading it a little bit later on. Thanks for coming in and sharing some of the details.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, let's take one last break. We'll come back after this. It's Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL.